This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Not all cough drops are created equal. I've been playing from this mystery bag today, and there was one that's like a strawberries and cream that's just like straight up candy. And then there's one that I just popped in during the commercial break, which is like acid menthol. I'm just not enjoying all of them the same amount. One story not related to either of the main professional teams in this city, not even related to Sporting Kansas City, who I just think I accidentally made not a professional team. A story not related to any of the professional teams in the area that I found really interesting over this week came out of Kansas State. And I could try to summarize and explain the story to you, but I probably wouldn't do it all that well. So what we're doing instead is bringing on someone who will be able to explain it all much, much better. Joining the show now is Grant Nicholson from 91.9 KSDB in Manhattan. He is the sports director there. Grant, thank you for joining the show again. What the hell was going on in K-State?
That's a pretty good question, Josh.
Thank you.
I don't really know where to start. Essentially, we have Corey Sutton, who this past season was a redshirt freshman wide receiver. He was recruited and brought in during a time where Kansas State had very few wide receivers. And so then he was told, supposedly by his receiver coach, this is a story that he tells Andre Coleman, that he was going to get ample play time, of opportunity to potentially start his freshman season.
Mm-hmm.
Comes to pass this year. Doesn't really happen. He plays in all 10 games, or he plays in 10 out of the games for K-State. Only catches 4 balls, doesn't play that many snaps, 54 yards for him. Unfortunately, he was recruited when a time when K-State was very light at wide receiver, but then we have all these guys kind of pop up out of nowhere. Last season, we have Byron Pringle. He's a sophomore wide receiver. Dominique Keith, another sophomore wide receiver. Isaiah Zuber comes out of nowhere. He's a freshman wide receiver as well. And then you're looking at Corey Sutton. He's now 4th or 5th on the depth chart at wide receiver, and he's not getting the play time that he wanted. So he wants out, asks for a transfer, and then he's denied that transfer by Bill Snyder. He apparently had 35 teams on his list, some of them D1, some of them FCS. None of them in the Big 12 or on K-State's future opponents list, which rankles a lot of people around. He's denied. Bill Snyder comes out and says some ill-advised statements on Friday night, mentions potential drug test failures. We don't know if those are related necessarily to Corey Sutton, but that's kind of the implication where those statements were going from Coach Snyder. I'll let people kind of make that assumption for themselves. But then he's, of course, released yesterday, kind of bringing to a close this whole saga.
Well, and also I'm looking at an article from ESPN. It says when reached on Friday by ESPN before the statement was released by K-State, Sutton said that Snyder's assertion he had failed 2 drug tests was false. So that adds another kind of question mark on the end of it for me at least. But overall, this sort of, at least on a semi-small scale, blew up in K-State's face here, and it looks really bad for Bill Snyder. Does this have any lasting implications on the program, or is this a one-off, just poorly handled situation?
I think if a lot of people who follow K-State will remember a few years back, there was an issue with a K-State women's basketball player, Leticia Romero, who was denied her transfer. That saga lasted for several months, but of course there's a new sort of sheriff in charge at K-State, new AD, athletic director Gene Taylor. I don't really think that this will have a lasting impact. A lot of players came out in support of Bill Snyder. They said, you know, this is the way his program is run. You got to kind of pay your dues. Coming as a redshirt freshman, you know, your opportunities to start and play are going to be a little bit limited. If you look at the program that K-State runs, if you look to like how they have run for the past 30 years under Coach Bill Snyder, this is kind of the way always things have always been done. I don't think we always hear so much about these sort of issues. I think a lot of things in the K-State program are handled internally. You heard stories out this past week about Bill Snyder denying transfers, but none of it really blew up until this year. So I don't think it'll change the program that much. Obviously, it's some bad PR. Maybe some recruits will be, you know, pushed away from the school. But honestly, if they're already thinking about transferring from K-State, I think they're already on the bad foot anyways.
Would you be in favor of a system making it easier for guys to transfer from one college to another? Or do you think maybe at the very least school should be a little bit less obtrusive in the way that they try to keep guys with their current program whenever you consider that, you know, it's infinitely easy for a coach to leave one program for another whenever they have either more success than they wanted or maybe less control than they wanted? Would you have any reformation of the transfer process, or would you leave it more or less as is?
I think there's a lot of, you know, underlying issues with the NCAA in relation to this, because if you start changing the transfer system, then we have to start talking about at one point, do they become employees? How binding are these contracts, these letter of intents that they sign? It's a deep, deep issue in the NCAA. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk of paying players recently. Mm-hmm. I think that as a person, as a student at K-State, I think it'd be nice to say, well, obviously, I want to side with the player. I want to side with them and say it should be easier for them. We shouldn't be denying them if they're unhappy at K-State, if they want to leave. But at the same time, I understand where Bill Snyder's coming from. When you sign that letter of intent, it essentially you're entering yourself into a four-year contract with K-State. They're willing to pay for your school 4 or 5 years in return for, you know, you to play football there. So you kind of have to be held to that standard, I believe. So right now, I think it'd be difficult to make a whole lot of changes. I don't know if there's one simple way to change it, but as if you look forward and you look at potentially adding more, you know, payment for these players, whether that be stipends or whatnot, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that could be one area where the NCAA makes some changes, but right now it's hard to see exactly what that change can be made that, you know, makes everybody happy in this situation.
You mentioned Gene Taylor, the new athletic director, and I listened to a good portion of his sort of like surprise interview whenever he spoke a lot about this. I guess it was on Thursday. I think it was before the official release. Maybe it was. I might have that backwards. Regardless, he was sort of surprisingly open from what I heard, considering the level of sort of self-defense you might get from your average athletic director. Do you see, or how do you see him influencing K-State's athletic program in general in years coming up?
Yeah, it's tough to say right now, you know, just a month and a half or 2 months into his reign or whatever you want to call it. But I think a lot of the initial responses are going to be positive. And it's going to be – he's going to have a ton of impact on the program because in the next 2 years, at minimum probably, he's going to have – couple major decisions to make. Obviously, there's Bill Snyder. His health is hurting him a little bit. Obviously, the cancer scare earlier, and on, I believe it was Thursday when he made those statements, he had a cancer treatment or checkup earlier that day. And so he's getting up there. I mean, he's already retired once. That's going to be a big change. It's likely going to fall to Gene Taylor in the future, where the football program goes from there. A lot of it is going to hinge on that decision where you go for the next head coach. And in the basketball program, I know earlier we talked about Bruce Weber and that whole issue, that whole saga really surrounding them at the NCAA tournament. That's going to be a big decision. There's talks about handing him an extension, which is something I understand in the world of college sports.
Right.
You want to have that stability trying to recruit players. You don't want to say, hey, I'm going under contract for the next year and a half. I don't know what's going to happen then. You want to say, I'm going to be here for 4 years. I can bring you into the program.
Mm-hmm.
If a change has to be made, a change has to be made there. And those are two major decisions. And the two major revenue-driving sports that he's going to have to make decisions on in the next year to 2 years. I mean, the window is really small for these couple of decisions.
You mentioned Bill Snyder's health and his future in general. I know you're not going to be able to look into a crystal ball here, but what's your general feeling and what's the attitude around K-State for how much longer he's going to stick around at the helm of the football program?
A lot of talk, I think every year it feels like I hear somebody say, oh, I think this is Bill Snyder's last year. Uh-huh. And I've always kind of been on the side, erring on caution there. I was like, I don't know. I don't really feel it. This year, I kind of feel it. I think, obviously, the health stuff is pretty big. I think there's a lot of murmurings going around that it's probably going to be his last year. But also, it makes a lot of sense because this is kind of the last big year, I can say, perhaps for Coach Snyder. I mean, obviously, this team is ranked in a lot of preseason top 25s. A lot of people are saying this is kind of his last shot to go big. There's, you know, they're ranked top 5 in the Big 12 in a lot of preseason polls. People think that this could be the next year where they go for a potential Big 12 championship. There's the outside possibility that people think that maybe they can make a run to the college football playoff. I mean, that's a little far-fetched. But, I mean, this is if he was going to do it, this is the last year to do it. Obviously bringing back a lot of players, a lot of people on both sides of the football. But I think that this is probably the last year. I think a lot of things, you know, kind of line up to this being the last hurrah for Bill Snyder.
I'm going back to, you mentioned Bruce Weber, which is a real trigger phrase for me. I'm still baffled by the fact that we're talking extension and not, you know, whoever the new guy is in town. I understand the extension conversations because you want to have that illusion of stability, but it would just be an illusion to give Bill, to not to give us, excuse me, to provide him an extension and to even consider the idea that Bruce Weber is certainly the long-term answer at K-State. I know that we had this conversation a couple of months ago, but is anybody optimistic about the future of the K-State basketball program? Is anyone optimistic about a team led by Bruce Weber?
I think you're selling the K-State fan base short. I think a lot of people are more optimistic than you would have let on. I think it being the off-season helps a lot when you hear recruiting things.
No, that's a good point, Grant. Now is the time to be optimistic because you can't actually watch the teams play basketball. That's a good point.
Isn't that the truth? When you're just seeing things on Twitter about which recruits we're in for, what four-star guy we're going to finish third on, you know, it's pretty good to be optimistic, right?
Yes, which four-star recruit will Bruce Weber narrowly miss out on? That's the conversation that I certainly want to be having. Well, Grant, thank you again for joining us and helping to make some sense of everything going on at K-State.
Appreciate it, Josh. Thanks, man.
That's Grant Nicholson from 91.9 KSDB in Manhattan. It's an interesting case, everything that's going on there at K-State. Both programs seem to be in tumultuous positions because you don't know what the future of Bill Snyder looks like, the future of that program. Grant says he's spent most of his time being kind of a contrarian whenever it comes to, oh, well, this is Snyder's last year. This is Snyder's last year. This is Snyder's last year. He says, you know, even he's coming around this season thinking, well, this actually does make a lot of sense to be the end of the Bill Snyder reign. I can't even comprehend the fact that Bruce Weber is getting more time with the K-State basketball program. But again, if you're going to be optimistic about a Bruce Weber program, I guess it's best to do it whenever they're not actually playing basketball. I mean, that's got to be a really depressing reality, right? Thinking, you know what? Yeah, if we narrowly miss out on the right recruits, maybe we finish in the top half of the Big 12. Maybe. But probably not. Interesting stuff going on in the Little Apple. Whenever we come back, we'll talk about any number of other smaller stories that have been swirling around over the past week, from Bryce Harper to Tiger Woods. That's next year on Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday.
913-3810-810 is the phone number. If you think I'm on to something,
with Joshua Briscoe,
or if you think I'm on something, either way, love to have you.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Today's been a fun show. I've had a good time today. Maybe because it's been a boost of adrenaline. It's trying to maybe forget about my 125-degree fever. Charlie, find out for me. This will be a little impromptu science segment. Find out. Charlie just rolled his eyes and then mouthed, "Oh God." Look up what a fever has to be before it's like definitely fatal. I don't know what that number is, but just find that. And whenever you know what it is, just give me a thumbs up and then get your little sounder ready for the Sports Sunday Science segment. Because I do wonder what that is. But I teased as we went to break. There've been a lot of interesting sort of smaller stories this week that I wanted to touch on. Not stuff that demands a whole segment like the Royals or a whole hour like the Chiefs cutting Jeremy Maclin. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to talk about Tiger Woods, but apparently we have an update.
Grab your beakers and dangerous chemicals. It's time for the Sports Sunday Science segment starring Charlie Charlin.
Charlie, what do we have?
Very relevant topic today.
Yes, it is.
For you.
It absolutely. Something you need to know.
According to Wikipedia, because we all know that's a very valuable source.
Sure.
Very credible source.
It's usually nice and peer-reviewed.
Although it is unpleasant. Fever rarely rises to a dangerous level even if untreated.
Really?
Damage to the brain generally does not occur until temperature reaches 107.6 Fahrenheit.
Wow.
Which is just sounds insanely hot. Terrible. And it is rare for an untreated fever to exceed 105. So we'll say 105.
Wow. I mean, over 105, and it's like, oh, this is not normal. 107 is like brain damage. The average body temperature is 98.6, according to the internet currently. I gotta be at least in the mid-110s. Especially if I listen to enough of my sports takes. You know, it's certainly brain damage. Thank you, Charlie. That was our most relevant ever episode of the Sports Sunday Science segment.
Yes, I'm very proud of it.
Could you also find out for me how many flavors of cough drops there are and why they still make ones that taste like liquid lightning plus menthol?
If you can drink them? Weren't you saying if you can drink
chug.
Them?
I said, can you chug them?
There, that's what it was.
Can you chug a cough drop or chug cough drops? I don't really know what that would look like, but I think I've been doing it. Tiger Woods was pulled over or arrested on Monday. So we're almost a full week out from this story, at least the beginning of this story. I understand that it's a little bit late, but whenever it first was announced that he had been arrested for DUI, it was kind of like the first reaction was like, good God, what is with this guy and vehicles and holidays? And then the mugshot came out, and the mugshot was just amazing. I mean, like, truly, you could, if you looked up on Merriam-Webster, the phrase "fall from grace," it would have been the definition, and then that mugshot. I mean, just incredible. And then it came out that not only was his PR people saying, actually it was not alcohol, it was pills. And then the police report comes out, and the police report says that he blew a .000. Twice, blood alcohol level, of course. The tone, at least for me, started to really change. Like, it just became sad. Because this is a guy that's had a bunch of back surgeries and has been prescribed any number of different drugs. And it's not less dangerous. And I'm not trying to, like, quantify the danger between the two. I think the danger between the two is probably about equal, although there's also an incredible danger to driving while super exhausted. And I've driven sleepily a huge number of times. And that can be just as dangerous in a lot of ways as driving drunk. But you have the levels of like morality attached to it, and then how do you maybe sympathy for the person if somebody dies because they were really tired? You go, oh, that's really sad, that's tragic. If somebody dies or hurts or kills someone else while driving drunk, you go, what an idiot. The idea of accidentally ending up with a bad mixture of pain meds that you had been prescribed falls somewhere in the middle for me, and I just thought it was interesting how that detail really changed my kind of like gut reaction to the story as a whole. Because it's still driving under the influence. It's driving under the influence of debilitating pain meds, supposedly, that just made him a zombie. You know, they found him asleep at the wheel and incredibly groggy. But I've driven incredibly groggily. And I think that kind of that gradient of maybe being equally dangerous, or at least close to being equally dangerous, but different levels of offensive, different types of mistakes, I thought was just very interesting. I think you have to, if your knee-jerk reaction was like mine, to go, come on, this guy's got to get his life together, also that mugshot's hilarious, I think you have to do a little bit of recalibration whenever you find out, oh, this was actually not what we thought it was. The other thing that I thought was interesting from this week was the Bryce Harper, Hunter Strickland, intentionally beaning Harper charging Strickland brawl thing. Calling it a brawl feels like a little bit much still, but it was a real baseball fight. It was a solid, genuine baseball fight. And there were just so many things in that like 30-second period that I thought were just so incredible. I mean, even just like before there were ever even punches thrown, Buster Posey just standing there, just watching it all happen. Charlie, if you've not seen this, the Bryce Harper, Hunter Strickland. Okay, now Charlie's back on board. Charlie left the room for a second. I think what happened...
We've been having all sorts of issues around here this morning.
Yeah, that's true. Charlie's been fixing things. So we had a power outage like right after I got here this morning. It was like 6:58 or something, and the power flickered. So we've been playing catch up since then. But I think what happened is that Charlie left the room mid Tiger Jones. What was he doing there? When did Tiger Jones? Is there even a Jones in this? I don't think there's any Joneses on my mind currently. That's bizarre. I think he left in the middle of the Tiger Woods conversation and then came back wondering why I had Buster Posey just standing there watching Tiger Woods stumble across a street. So we have switched gears completely. I thought that fight, that baseball fight with Harper and Strickland was so interesting for so many reasons. Buster Posey just standing there watching it all happen was kind of amazing. Harper, like, appearing to genuinely want to throw his helmet into the face of Hunter Strickland and then just having it fly out of his hand at an incredible angle that just didn't even seem human. That was amazing. But what I've heard that I like this the best. We have to change unwritten rules and change baseball fights. Here's how we can do it logically. First of all, I think it was Dan Le Batard that was saying, really, why if you are just consumed by rage, why doesn't the batter take the bat out with him? It's a good point. I mean, really, if I was enraged and had to like fight to the death, I'd rather have a baseball bat than no baseball bat. That's one. Excuse me. There it is. Sometimes I've had my hand on the cough button all day, and then sometimes it just catches me. But that's, you know, maybe there's some shame in taking a real weapon like that. Just walking out there with the baseball bat, maybe that's too much. So here's what I like. Here's the evolution of this. Because baseball as a whole has apparently agreed that the baseball itself can be used as a disciplining device whenever a pitcher sees fit. If you get plunked, the batter should just pick the ball up off the ground and just fling it back at the pitcher. That seems just. Now, the pitcher's throwing it harder, and more accurately because he's a pitcher. But I think that, I think if Bryce Harper would have just taken the hit, bent down, picked up the ball, and then just wound up and flung it right back at Hunter Strickland, I think that would have been, it would have been like a duel. That way it's not so heavy-handed in favor of the pitcher. Then it's like an old-timey high noon duel between the pitcher and the batter. I think that's the only way you handle this from now on. I think this is the solution. This is the chivalrous, knightly way of going about these baseball fights. Unless you have a better idea. Now, apparently, Strickland had been, like, holding a grudge for, like, 3 years because I think Harper homered off of him twice in the playoffs. And that's a different conversation to be had, I suppose. But that just fills me with such angst. I cannot roll my eyes at that hard enough. You got shown up because Bryce Harper is better at hitting than you are at pitching. He watched his home runs off of his bat for just a half second too long. And then you waited 3 years to beat him in the side. But it's the unwritten rules. If you show up a pitcher, he's going to hit you with a projectile weapon. Baseball. At the very least, can we all acknowledge the ridiculousness? Charlie, again, working to bring the studio back together, was just holding his phone up next to a television that it's not turning on. And I'm curious as to why he was doing that. But he's very busy, so I don't know.
I was using my camera because I can't see the television controls, so I was using my camera to see where
what
the
are you trying
up
to
and
do?
Channel down. I'm just trying to fix this TV in here.
Is it just will the TV
just
itself
no
not come on?
Just no signal. It finally got it to turn on.
Okay.
But there's just no signal for the cable.
I don't think many people understand just the crippling feeling of helplessness that happens whenever it's 6:58 in the morning and you're in a radio station and the power goes out. That wasn't even the worst part of my morning. That happened, which was just very anxiety fueling. Because whenever that happens, basically everything goes back to like its default setting. So it's a good like exam. It's a good pop quiz on how well you know how to fix everything in the station. But also this morning, as I was leaving the house that I now live in, I apparently had set my cup of coffee in a plastic cup, thank God. You'll find out why soon. I had set it on my roof of my car and like loaded up my car, threw in my backpack, threw in a couple of pieces of toast that I made. And I drove from my like little parking space out to the end of the street. And whenever I stopped, I heard this like crashing sound. And I saw this explosion of liquid. And then I said some words. Not necessarily curse words. Just some words. That I couldn't say on radio. Mumbled them under my breath. And then I went out and picked up my coffee cup from the gravel. Also, Charlie says he fixed the TV. Nice job, Charlie. What about the Wi-Fi? The internet? Do we have internet yet?
We have Wi-Fi.
We have Wi-Fi, right? We have Wi-Fi. If we didn't have Wi-Fi
on our main computers,
that seems like a problem.
Yeah.
Because all of the computers that are like attached to, like the drive and everything here, are all attached by landline, right?
That's correct.
How am I gonna get this sweet show podcasted to the masses if we don't have the internet together?
The internet doesn't want you to podcast it.
The internet needs me to podcast. I need a podcast. How else will I see small but verifiable numbers where I can go, aha, yes, 27 people listened to me today by podcast. I know I was heard today. That's how I get my validation, Charlie. I'm validated by attention. 913-310-810. Just call in and tell me that you're listening. Don't actually do that. That'll just make Charlie's day more difficult. But it is 913-310-810. If you want to call and chime in, we'll give you a little bit of what's coming up today with the Royals whenever we come back. Also, for those of you who just happen to not listen to all 3 hours of this show, I will refresh you all on the latest with Jeremy Maclin and why this move was just so befuddling. We'll wrap up the show next year on Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Closing up shop here on a Sports Sunday, but there's still so much to get to. We haven't even talked about the NBA Finals at any point. Game 2 is tonight. I mean, Game 1 wasn't that interesting. We knew that the Cavs' defense was vulnerable. I didn't think it'd really be tested until Golden State showed up. And then the Cavs' offense wasn't good enough either. Tonight, I hope, is more interesting. But that's what I took away from Game 1. Charlie is cackling to himself, looking around. I'm guessing this has something to do with the fact that the computer that we use to play the funny liners isn't working today. Is that what your giggles are from?
Yes, and the fact that that's why there was a little bit of pause before we came back.
Right, yeah. This show today has been, for both of us, plagued by awkwardly long pauses.
Yes, it has.
Because I will occasionally slap the cough button for a solid like three count while I try to get in like three or four good hacks. Like that. And then there have been two or three instances when you've tried to play something out of the computer that literally I don't think has ever had this problem before.
Yeah,
I'm a little bit concerned that the power outage today just like killed it.
Just killed this whole station.
Can you imagine?
No, but I was trying to play it, yeah. Coming back from break, and it wouldn't go, it wasn't responding, whatever. And then so I had to play the generic one.
Yes.
And about, I don't know, 5 seconds ago, it just started playing, finally. So, like, oh, okay, now you want to play. There you go.
That's good. Also, Charlie's occasionally getting a private show of just my coughs, because the cough button, which just cuts my microphone, and the talk back button, which lets me talk to Charlie without it going out over the air, they're right next to each other. So then a couple of times when I've just blindly, like, turned my head from the microphone and just tried to hit the cough button, then I've actually hit the talk back instead. So Charlie is just getting like a full amplified like hack fest every once in a while. That has to be exciting.
Starting to get sick through the talkback button.
The Royals today are doing two slightly abnormal things in their lineup. The only real thing is that Salvador Perez is off today because it's a Sunday. Drew Butera is batting eighth, which means Whit Merrifield moves all the way up to sixth. All the way up to six. It also means that the 7-8-9-1 stretch of the lineup, which goes Moss, Butera, Gordon, Escobar, is not great. But hey, 12 runs yesterday, who can complain about it, right? I mean, you can still totally complain about it if you want. But the story of today, and the story that I spent the first hour and a half of today's show on, is the Chiefs cutting Jeremy Maclin late on Friday. And if you weren't around for the front end of this show, I'm going to try to give you the 15-minute version of the two-hour-long conversation that we've had. The thing that I usually pride myself on, whenever it comes to the Chiefs, media in general, sports in general, I try really hard to find the logic behind every possible angle of a story. Especially with the Chiefs, because I am a Chiefs fan. I also really like being a Chiefs analyst. being a fanalist, being both of those things at the same time, very often doesn't work because there's too much of one or the other. And in recent years, I've probably given up some. I know this for a fact. Really, I've given up some youthful fandom for the sake of looking at things more objectively, perhaps trying to feed the cynicism and the optimism. It's difficult, but I always try to do that. And with this Jeremy Maclin releasing, I have had an impossible time justifying this move. I've had an impossible time getting into the head of John Dorsey or Andy Reid, figuring out why they ultimately decided to make this decision. Because it might help the 2018 Chiefs a little bit. It helps them a little bit more than it would have by cutting him next offseason, because they can carry over some of the dead cap space, or not the dead cap space, but they can carry over some of the cap space they might not use this year. But it doesn't help this year at all. It makes this season, it makes the offense for this season, the outlook for the offense this season, obviously, palpably worse. And this is an offense last year that was absolutely bringing up the rear of the team. An offense that was not good enough. An offense that wasn't good enough to score 19 points at home after a bye week for the sake to go to the NFC to the AFC Championship game. They lost to the Steelers at home 18-16. The Steelers did nothing but score field goals. And the Chiefs couldn't string together enough offensive success to stay in that game. To win that game, at the very least. They were in the game, whatever. The offense had some good moments last year, but it wasn't good overall. I came into this offseason thinking that the place the Chiefs most need to take palpable steps forward to be a contender this year is with the offense. Now, Patrick Mahomes was never meant to make this year's offense better, but I was excited about that draft pick, and still am excited about that draft pick, because he has a chance to make the offense of the future better. But as far as this year's offense, they've traded Jamaal Charles for Kareem Hunt, which could work out great. We don't know. That's I'm totally willing to wait to pass judgment on that one. No slight to Kareem Hunt. I'm excited for him. And they've traded Jeremy Maclin for Jehu Chasson. You're not going to find a football fan on the planet that would argue genuinely that Jehu Chasson's going to have a bigger impact in 2017 than Jeremy Maclin is. He's not going to have a bigger impact in 2018 or 2019 or ever, in all likelihood. I hope he does. I hope he's a nice part of the offense. I hope one of these guys, and they are just guys, steps up. But I don't see it happening in a way that accounts for Jeremy Maclin going missing. And I'm a huge optimist about Tyreek Hill. I'm relatively optimistic for Chris Conley. Travis Kelce is a beast already. But even if you are maximum optimistic, let yourself be maximally optimistic here for just a minute. Let's say that Tyreek Hill is developing into DeSean Jackson, which I think is a reasonable comparison. They have all the same physical tools. Tyreek Hill has crazy playmaking ability. So let's say that Tyreek Hill is developing into DeSean Jackson. Let's say that Chris Conley is developing into Jeremy Maclin, which is really the ceiling of what he could be. And that's not a slight to Chris Conley. Be super optimistic. Say that Travis Kelce is going to be Rob Gronkowski. Say that Alex Smith has the best season of his career. even if all of those incredibly optimistic things come through, the offense would still be better with Jeremy Maclin as its number three wide receiver than with Jehu Chesson or Albert Wilson or DeAnthony Thomas or DeMarcus Robinson. For this move to make sense, Hill has to be a number one receiver, which I think is possible. Chris Conley has to be a top level number two wide receiver, which plausible. I'll say that's plausible. And Wilson or Chesson or Robinson or DeAnthony Thomas have to be Jeremy Maclin. And that's not going to happen. And if you're going to argue, listen, you got to have those guys. The only way to get those guys to develop is to get them more snaps. If you're saying that the reason that you would cut Jeremy Maclin is to get more snaps to those guys, then you've got to totally reset what you're expecting from this year's Chiefs team. Because if that's the case, then just go ahead and lop off all the veterans and try to get that young core together for whenever Patrick Mahomes takes the team over.
Which is not at all what we were expecting in 2017.
No, and no one with the Chiefs is ever going to say that either. I don't think that's what they're doing. I don't think the Chiefs have recalibrated their expectations. I don't think you as a fan should. That coming in with that expectation would be incredibly pessimistic and a little bit nuts. But that's what your line of logic demands that you do if you go so far as to say this is about getting Chris Conley more snaps. You can get Chris Conley and Tyreek Hill more targets with Jeremy Maclin still on the field. Jeremy Maclin demands respect from defenses. Defenses pay more attention to Jeremy Maclin than they do to Albert Wilson. And Alex Smith seems, from everything we've ever seen, seems to love throwing the ball to Jeremy Maclin. We had Seth Kaiser on earlier in the show. He said all these guys have to be better. And also, Alex Smith has to be better without Jeremy Maclin because Jeremy Maclin has the ability to bail your quarterback out from some bad throws. You can miss Jeremy Maclin by a little bit, and he can still turn it into a positive play. Have you ever seen that quality out of Albert Wilson? The best you can expect from Albert Wilson or DeAnthony Thomas is that they get put in a perfect situation with a perfect everything around them and then they just don't screw it up. They're just those guys are small pieces of an average offense. And the Chiefs run three wide receiver sets all the time. Even if Jeremy Maclin is your overpaid third receiver, I wouldn't cut him as your overpaid third receiver. And, spoiler, Chris Conley is not better than Jeremy Maclin is right now. Right now, I don't think Tyreek Hill's a better wide receiver. And I am super, super optimistic about Tyreek Hill. But like, just look at last season. A stat that I've seen come around from a lot of big Chris Conley fans explains that Conley and Jeremy Maclin had virtually identical stat lines last year. And this is from Matt Verderam on Twitter. He says, Chris Conley and Jeremy Maclin had identical numbers last year. But Chris Conley needed 200 extra snaps. Those guys are not equals. And it's also Jeremy Maclin, the leader of your wide receiver room, the leader of that positional group. I just cannot at any point find real solid logic here. And if you start to have the discussion, we mentioned this earlier and talked about this yesterday some, if you look at the list of free agent wide receivers, and try to talk yourself into Anquan Boldin or Eddie Royal or Vincent Jackson, and you admit that the Chiefs need to bring in a veteran wide receiver, then you're admitting that they made a mistake in cutting Jeremy Maclin, because this is a roster that needs a veteran wide receiver presence. You're taking a loss by even having that conversation. Let's go to the phones real quick. We don't have a whole lot of time here, but let's go to Randy. Randy, what's up?
Hey, no, I mean, I kind of agree with you. I kind of don't. I mean, I was shocked when I saw Maxon was cut, and I wish they hadn't done it. But what he did last year wasn't worth $11 million. And I don't know if you think it was worth $11 million, but I don't think it was. And I mean, I do think it's time for Conley to step up, you know? I do think it's...
Yeah, but it can be time for Conley.
Tyreek Hill's going to take over, you know? I mean, and I don't think Chesson's taking Macklin's spot. I mean, I think it's going to be either Hill or Conley that does. I mean, I guess I was shocked, wish they hadn't done it, but $11 million is a lot of money for a Macklin.
Randy, thank you for the call. We're out of showtime, but I appreciate it. I don't think that Jeremy Maclin was worth $11 million in value last year, but I think the offense is appreciably worse without him. And now you're not just taking that off the books. You're also holding on to $7.5 million of owed money you have to give to Jeremy Maclin. That's $2.5 million in 2017, 18, and 19. You're paying him big money to not play for you. And Chesson, or whatever that third guy is going to essentially be taking his spot, because there's a trickle-down effect here. You replace Maclin with Hill. You replace Hill with Chris Conley. You replace Chris Conley with Wilson, Chesson, whoever it may be. The whole way down the line, the Chiefs' offense is worse without Jeremy Maclin. I think that's simply undeniable. Thanks to Grant Nicholson and Seth Kaiser for joining me. I'm Joshua Briscoe. This has been Sports Sunday. I'm sick.